wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
This week on Dear Science, Francis was joined by AUT Professor Alan Blackman talking about the Ig Nobel Prizes, toilet training cows, and the food scientists who have found the key to perfectly smooth chocolate. Here they are now.
Shall we get into some science for the morning?
Absolutely.
Let's begin with the Ig Nobel Prize. It's very exciting.
Yes, no, I do like this whenever this rolls around every year. The Ig Nobel Prizes, for those of you who don't know, these are announced prior to the real Nobel Prizes. And the Ig Nobel Prizes were started in 1991, and they were to, quote, honour achievements that first make people laugh and then make them think. So they've been awarded every year since 1991. The award ceremony takes place at Harvard, and this was last week. And it's always a very, very big deal. It's live streamed, all that sort of stuff, all around the world. And this very year, we have a winner of the Ig Nobel Prize for Chemistry who comes actually from the University of Auckland. How cool is that? So Dr. Jörg Vicker from the Department of Computer Science, along with co-authors from the Max Planck Institute in Germany, they were awarded the Chemistry Ig Nobel Prize for chemically analyzing the air inside movie theaters to test whether the odors produced by an audience reliably indicate the levels of violence, sex, antisocial behavior, drug use, and bad language in the movie the audience is watching. So, indeed, first makes you laugh, then makes you think. So what they were doing was they were analyzing the air in movie theaters where different movies were being shown with different ratings, different classifications. And they were analyzing the emissions of the people in the movie theater, seeing if there's any relationship between the molecules that they emitted and essentially the age range of the movie itself. And amazingly, what they did find was that there's a molecule called isoprene, and this particular molecule does serve as a reliable indicator of the age range of the movie being watched. So I think that's quite amazing. Now, very, very interestingly, the Ig Nobel Prizes are not awarded for recent work. So this work was actually done in 2008, quite a few years ago. And that's, I guess, what the Ig Nobel thing is all about, is basically sort of people trawling the literature and finding stuff that's been published. You know, it could have been last year, or it could be, you know, years and years and years ago. So let's briefly go through the rest of the winners. So the biology prize was awarded for analyzing variations in, get this, purring, chirping, chattering, twilling, tweedling, murmuring, meowing, moaning, squeaking, hissing, yowling, howling, growling, and other modes of cat-human communication. You know, these are all published papers. So all of these are real FEGO studies, you know, that have been carried out at academic institutions around the world. The Ecology Prize was awarded for using genetic analysis to identify different species of bacteria that reside in wads of discarded chewing gum stuck on pavements in various countries. A nice one for the Economics Prize. I like this. This was awarded for discovering that the obesity of a country's politicians may be a good indicator of that country's corruption. This is brilliant. So they made a study of a whole bunch of post-Soviet countries. They got pictures of all of the people in government there, and they figured out that the median BMI, the body mass index, of cabinet ministers is highly correlated with the conventional measures of corruption. So, yes, indeed. So, beware obese government officials in post-Soviet countries, I guess, is the moral of that story. The Medicine Prize, very important for demonstrating that sexual orgasms can be as effective as decongestant medicines at improving nasal breathing. The Peace Prize for testing the hypothesis that humans evolved beards to protect themselves from punches to the face. And they did do an experiment on this, and they did find that, yes, beards do protect to a certain extent from punches to the face. So whether that is an evolutionary thing or not has yet to be proven. The Entomology Prize, a new method of cockroach control on submarines. And finally, and probably most importantly, actually, a bunch of folk in Namibia, South Africa, Tanzania, Zimbabwe, Brazil, the UK, and the USA were awarded the Transportation Prize for determining by experiment whether it is safer to transport an airborne rhinoceros upside down. And you might think, good grief, what's that got to do with anything? Well, in fact, it is quite important because if they're looking to transport rhinoceri, or rhinoceroses or whatever, which are endangered species, it's kind of important how they do that. And apparently, if you've got a rhinoceros that you do want to transport, the best way of doing it is apparently upside down on a helicopter. If you put them on their side, they're very, very heavy, and so their internal organs can be damaged and stuff if they're tranquilized, et cetera, et cetera. So this actually was a real fair go study, and they did find that, yes, the best way to do it is to swing them upside down from a helicopter, and that's the best way of doing it. So interesting stuff. As the name suggests, again, you first make people laugh and then you make them think. So these, as I say, they're all serious studies and all very, very worthy of the award of the Ig Nobel Prize.
Absolutely fascinating. I'll look forward to seeing some upside down flying rhinoceri at some point. let's move on to the next one about toilet training cows, which I believe is a bit of a local initiative.
Indeed it is too. So there's a local theme to today's show. Again, another worker from the University of Auckland. This is Lindsay Matthews from the psych department at the University of Auckland, who has come up with an answer along with his co-workers to the question, can cows be toilet trained? And the answer to that is yes. And so he and a bunch of researchers in Germany have found that yes, it is possible to toilet train cows. And you might think, well, what, why, for goodness sake, would you want to even think about toilet training cows? Well, as a lot of people now realize, the agricultural industry is one of the biggest emitters of greenhouse gases. So we have to somehow mitigate those emissions before, I think, what is it, 2050 or something like that. And so one of the bad things that cows do is that they urinate and they defecate everywhere. And especially when they urinate, what happens is that the urine goes into the ground and that then produces ammonia. Now, if you've got the correct bugs in the ground, that ammonia can be converted to N2O, okay, nitrous oxide, okay, or otherwise known as laughing gas. And that is a really bad greenhouse gas. So it's about the third worst greenhouse gas that you can get. So the ammonia that is produced from cow urine and cow feces is what's called an indirect greenhouse gas because it leads to the production of the stuff of N2O. So what we as a nation need to do is to somehow stop the cows basically piddling everywhere so that we can mitigate all of these greenhouse gases, these potential greenhouse gases. So what they are doing is a thing called Mulu training, which I think is very cute. I'm not sure what the Waikato rugby team supporters think about that name. I think they had that sort of patented first. But what they did was they potty trained, essentially, cows. So in the same way as you do with young kids, so the cows were rewarded when they piddled in the specially constructed loo. And so they got given food every time they did that. And every time they didn't do that, where they urinated where they weren't meant to, then they were given a punishment. And what they started off by doing was to put headphones on them and play a disturbing noise every time they piddled in the wrong place. And that didn't bother the cows one iota, seemingly. But what did was a 3-second spray with water. And so every time they piddled in the wrong place, they get sprayed with water. And that seemed to work really well. And over several weeks, what they found was they had 16 cows in the trial group and 11 of those became trained, toilet trained to a level of performance comparable to that of children and indeed better than very young children, which when you think about it is quite amazing. And I guess, you know, we all know that animals, certainly domestic animals, you know, can be trained, obviously your cats, your dogs, et cetera, et cetera. Cows, I guess, I don't know, people probably haven't thought of doing this, but it seems to work. And, you know, it might seem a little bit crazy, might seem worthy of an Ig Nobel Prize down the track, possibly. But what they say is that if they capture 80% of the urine that cows emit, then you could decrease ammonia emissions by 56%. And thereby you can, you know, then decrease the N2O emissions as well. And that has to be a good thing. So this is a really, really nice piece of work. And I would imagine, yeah, I think it's sort of made the news. I think the news outlets are picking this one up. It's just very, very recently published in the journal called Current Biology. So well done to Auckland University again.
Yeah, I think one of the WIRE teams earlier in the week might have spoken with the researchers. So if anyone's interested in listening to a bit more about the science, you could go back and have a look on the BCasts. Let's jump into the last story, which is making me quite hungry, about food scientists finding the key to perfectly smooth chocolate.
Yes, I know. Yeah, chocolate's tricky stuff, actually, and it's a lot trickier than I really imagined. You just sort of think that, you know, you melt the stuff and you put it in a mold and bam, you've got it. No. There's way more to it than that. And I guess if you've ever had bad chocolate, it's all sort of crunchy and sandy, and, you know, if it comes out the wrong way, it's not great. So what's important? Chocolate seems to have to be glossy. You've got that beautiful outside gloss on it. The texture is really important. The hardness is really important. These things don't come about by chance. So they've done an awful lot of study on chocolate, you know, an awful lot of science on chocolate. And what they've found is that there are particular molecules in chocolate that have to organize themselves just so in a particular way in order to get that lovely smooth texture. Now, this organization, the just so organization, the six possible ways that these molecules can organize themselves, only one of those six gives you the lovely smooth texture and everything. So how then do you get chocolate to what we say crystallize in this one particular way out of six? So what they do in the chocolate manufacture process is a thing called tempering. And tempering is the repeated heating and cooling and heating and cooling and heating and cooling of chocolate until it decides to crystallize in this nice smooth form. And you can imagine that is a time-consuming process and certainly an energy-consuming process as well, having to heat and cool and heat and cool and heat and cool. So now some researchers in Canada have made what to me seems like an enormous breakthrough in the science of chocolate. And they have found that instead of doing all of this tempering stuff and taking all this time and all of this energy, all that you have to do is take your molten chocolate. To it, you add a molecule called a saturated phospholipid. And that molecule is already present as a minor component in cocoa butter. So it's a natural molecule. You put this into your molten chocolate, you cool it down quickly, and lo and behold, bam, it comes out perfect. It comes out perfectly smooth, the right texture, everything, and you don't seemingly have to do this tempering. And they studied this. They actually studied that, you know, this might sound like, you know, sort of something you do in the kitchen or whatever. They actually studied this at a place called a synchrotron, which is about the most expensive sort of piece of scientific kit that you can get. And there's only a few of them around the world. Here they are studying bloody chocolate in this really, really, really high-tech place, which is quite extraordinary. And as I say, this sounds like an enormous advance if you can save the time and save the energy simply by adding this simple natural molecule, then, you know, I'm sure the chocolate companies will be beating a path to their door.
Absolutely. I might need to go and do some chocolate testing of my own.
Some taste testing right now. Yep. I'm with you on that.
Awesome. Hey, thanks, Alan, for chatting with me this morning.
Always good.
As per usual.
Thank you. And take care, everybody, and yourself, Francis. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right. Matewa.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.